If you want to turn back to that Psalm 65, I want us to reflect for a short time on it. It is really a harvest psalm. Psalm 65. It was written by David. Probably used a lot in the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, and also at other times of the year when there was a particular emphasis on food and the harvest. When I read through this psalm recently, I was drawn especially to verse 4, and that's really what I want to use as my kind of theme, the second half of verse 4. We are filled with the good things of your house. We are filled with the good things of your house, of your holy temple. I want us to see today three things that God offers us, and not only at harvest time, but at all times. But at harvest, I think we see it particularly intensified and particularly clearly. In the theology of the Bible, the temple of the Old Testament was in some ways meant to be a reflection of the temple of the earth. That the house of God is the world. Psalm 24 says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. And everything in the earth is meant to reflect glory to the Creator, to the Maker. And so whenever the Old Testament folks built the temple, it was meant to be an intensification of what was already in the world that God had created. The earth is God's temple or God's house, and everything in it is meant to display God's glory. And as we come to harvest today, what we see around us is an intensification of what is outside in God's house or God's world. As we walked in today, we have seen samples of flowers and fruit and vegetables and so on. We have brought those things of nature into the house as a reminder of what we have from God every day and in every season. And sometimes it's good to experience this intensity. If I can illustrate it this way, I quite like a bit of lime juice in my water. And what you do is you get your glass of water and you put a little bit of the lime juice in it just to flavor it. One time, I'm not sure whether I told you this, but one time when I was minister in Killyleagh, I was visiting an older guy in the congregation, great old guy called Jimmy. And during the afternoon visit, he said, would you like to have a little juice, a bit of cordial or juice or raspberry juice? I said, okay, that would be nice. So he gave me this glass of juice, and I tasted it, and it was really strong. It was really strong. And I said to Jimmy, this is interesting stuff. I said, can I see the bottle? So he showed me the bottle, and it was meant to be diluted, but he wasn't diluting it. He was just pouring it in neat, as it were. And he thought this was great stuff. And I said, Jimmy, you know, this is meant to be diluted. I said, he says, can't be bothered with that. It's really nice as it is. So it was really, really intense. And okay, maybe intense in a bad way. But what we have done today in harvest is that we have brought something into the house and we have created, I suppose, an intensity that reminds us of what is probably more diluted in a sense out in God's world. But it's a reminder to us of the good things. It focuses our minds on the good things that we have in the world that we often forget. Three things I want us to see about what God offers us. First of all, we see in this psalm, and I'm working backwards here, backwards in the psalm, but from verses 9 to 13, we acknowledge God's provision in the house. We acknowledge God's provision in the house. He provides the right conditions for produce to flourish. It says in verse 9, you care for the land and you water it. It speaks of the importance of water. And in a land like Israel, believe me, water is at a premium. Water is important. But there's enough to provide the people with corn, verse 9, to bless its crops, verse 10, to enable the carts to overflow with abundance, verse 11. The psalm is a hymn of praise to God's provision and his faithfulness and to his goodness. And we have already been singing about God's faithfulness. We should be thankful every day for all God's provision. I wonder, before your meals, do you just pause and give thanks? It's a very simple thing, but I think it's a witness to God's provision that we as followers of Jesus should be doing. Whenever Jesus took that little picnic lunch, 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, what did he do? He gave thanks for it. He's modeling what we are to do, giving thanks for God's provision. Verses 12 and 13 are poetic as they use personification. The hills are clothed with gladness. The valleys are mantled with corn. They shout for joy and sing. There's an echo here, isn't there, of those famous words in Isaiah 55. You will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. The mountains and hills will burst into song before you, and all the trees of the field will clap their hands. You see, the earth is God's temple or God's house of praise. And it is rejoicing in him and giving glory to the Maker. So harvest is a time when we are filled with the good things of your house. And we rejoice in it and we give thanks. We have crammed this house full with good things that God gives. All good gifts around us are sent from heaven above. So thank the Lord, oh, thank the Lord for all his love. So today, we see God's provision. We are filled with the good things of your house. Then secondly, David talks in verses 5 to 8 about the witness of God's power. We witness God's power in the house. Modern man is investing a lot of money and time in searching the cosmos, in trying to identify planets that can sustain life, and they have yet to find such a thing. But God has made this earth, the blue planet, he has made this earth to flourish with good things. He has chosen to settle his purposes and his power upon this house, upon this planet. Earlier this week, Kay and I were at a lecture by a top cameraman, a BBC and RTE cameraman, who was giving a lecture about various films that he had put together over the years. He'd worked with David Attenborough and so on. And it was wonderful hearing the backstories to some of the shots and just the time that he took, sometimes standing for up to 10 hours in a river to just get the shot of a kingfisher. But as he was showing us all these things, everything from humpback whales to kingfishers to frogs to monkeys to crested grebes and so on, I felt like worshiping. I don't know what the rest of the people were doing in the theater, but I felt like worshiping as I saw the diversity and the variety and the wonder of the God who has designed all of this. At the end of Job, chapters 38 to 41, Job, as we know, has had an awful time, a horrendous time, and he comes to God, he's complaining to God, you know, God, why has this happened to me? But I've always been mystified by the fact that Job never really gets an answer as to why he is suffering. All that God does is he points to his creation. He points to his power and what he has done. And that was sufficient for Job. He has filled the house with his power. And we worship him. And the idea is that the nations, as we worship and as Israel worships, the nation is then drawn to this God, this Creator God. In verse 5, David speaks of the hope of all the ends of the earth and the farthest seas. In verse 8, he says, "Those living far away fear your wonders." The idea is that the people, the nations of the earth, see the worship of God's people and they are drawn to this God. And it becomes a house of prayer for all nations. So at Harvest today, we acknowledge God's provision in the house. We witness God's power in the house. And thirdly and finally, in verses 1 to 4, at the beginning of the psalm, we experience God's presence in the house. The Israelites had a sense of joy and fullness when they dwelt in the house of the Lord. One commentator has said this: to experience the hospitality of Yahweh was the ultimate in luxury and honor. Psalm 84, "How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord Almighty. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper, a menial job, in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked." Now, of course, God is not confined to a physical building. He was not confined to the temple of the Old Testament. He is certainly not confined to the walls of this place. God is a spirit, and he roams, and he moves where he wills. But when you have a building where God's people are meeting for worship and prayer, where you have a building where people are constantly going in and out, and people who are filled with the Spirit are constantly going in and out, then the building gains a fragrance of the Spirit. The Spirit lingers like a fragrance in this place. God dwells in the praises of his people. We are filled with the good things of your house. So whenever we come to church, we acknowledge God's provision, we witness God's power, but supremely, I would like us to experience God's presence. That's the best thing. And that's why I'm ending with this today and reversing the psalm. Because God's provision is great, God's power is wonderful, but there is nothing to beat his presence. Nothing. I love our Word and Spirit conferences, especially this Saturday, because again, it was the same this year. On the Saturday, I experienced the presence of the Holy Spirit probably more than any other day of the year, because God's Spirit is here. There's an expectation. There is a fullness. We are filled with the good things of your house. And on Saturday evening, it was lovely as we had even brought things formally to a close. No one was rushing away because they wanted to linger in the presence of the Spirit. It was awesome. It was wonderful. God wants to fill us with the good things of his house. He supremely wants to give us his presence. This is what Adam and Eve sought, the presence of the Lord. It's what Abraham sought. It's what Jacob sought. It's what Moses sought. It's what David sought. It's what Elijah and Elisha sought. It was what Peter and John and James sought. It was what Paul sought, the presence of the Lord. More than his provision, more even than his power, they wanted to dwell in his presence. Too often we rush away, content with acknowledging his provision, acknowledging his power, but not dwelling enough in his presence. And so far as I can do as the minister of this church, I want to encourage space for the presence of God. And I hope that you have that longing as well. I love that poem, or those words of poetry from Elizabeth Barrett Browning. "Earth's crammed with heaven, and every common bush afire with God, but only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest sit round and pluck blackberries. Let's feast on God and on the good things he has for us, more than the blackberries, good as they are. He invites us into his presence to experience fellowship with him and the joy that comes from that. In verse 1, David says, "Praise awaits you, O God in Zion. To you our vows will be fulfilled." One day we shall feast in Zion, in the New Jerusalem, and God's presence will be fully there, wonderfully there. And all manner of pain and sorrow and disappointments shall fade away in the light of his presence. We are filled with the good things of your house, and our hearts have been restored. Let's just pause and be still, and let's reflect on these words.